Do you want to add them in, Steve?
Yep, I'll do that now.
You can make the intros, just waiting on people.
Everybody, if you want to start your videos, you can. Here we go. Hi, everybody. Paul will be with us in a moment. I'm just having a bit of time for everyone to come in. Unmute your mics for a moment.
Hi, it's Lawrence Ralph here from the SIA. How are you doing?
Hi, Lawrence, you okay?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I can hear you, I just can't see you. There's so many people on here now, I can't see everybody.
I haven't got my camera on, to be truthful.
Is that what it is?
I'm keeping hidden for the moment.
Hi, Sharon at MHR here. I've got my camera on, but for some reason it's gone black.
Let's have a look. Let me see if I can. There we go. How's that? Okay. There we go. Sharon, you're in now.
Okay, lovely. Thank you.
I have to press buttons because it's a bit technical for me, this. Is that Mr. Ford I can see?
Can you hear me?
You can see me.
I can hear you, yes. Oh. Hi. Hi Scott, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. All I've got is SIA South of England's Regional Forum. Oh, you just come up on the camera in the top right-hand corner.
Long time no see, Mr. Ford. Hope you're well.
Well, I don't know about well. Yeah, I'm here. Tired.
I know that feeling. Hi, Kai, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Yeah, that's working well. So I'm just kind of get used to this Zoom technology.
Hi all, it's Paul. We'll give you another moment. Just a few more people. We're trying to get in.
We all having a good bank holiday. Oh, Alexandra, sorry, mate. I didn't unmute your microphone for some reason. It won't let me unmute it. Do you guys want to unmute your microphones? There you go.
I think...
Sharon, yours keeps muting for some reason. There you go. You're back in again now.
Yeah, it just dropped out. Sorry, I don't know what happened there.
That's okay. You're with us now.
I am, thank you.
Bit of a strange day to do it on a bank holiday, but can't go anywhere, can we, sir?
Right, exactly. And it makes no difference.
Really not.
Right, hey guys. Thank you all very much for joining. I know it's bank holiday, so I won't keep you too long. So happy VE Day, first of all, to everybody.
And to you.
We're not going to do a minute silence. It's a day of celebration, as far as I'm concerned. So. We'll get through this as quick as we can, and then you can enjoy the rest of your bank holiday. So my name's Paul MacArthur. I've been recently appointed by the SIA as the South of England Regional Lead. We're putting together a forum for security companies, ACS and non-ACS within the region, where we're gonna work on the collective and corporations of best practices in terms of our industry. I want to make the next hour very interactive. It's not going to be death by PowerPoint. It's really to make it as interactive as we can. There's going to be some additional webinars coming over the next few weeks, and then once we're out of lockdown, possibly going to then a monthly session where we can all get together. So a little bit about me. I've been in the industry 31 years.
Sorry to interrupt. Your video is not working.
That's okay.
Okay.
Originally started within SaberWatch, Vanguarding. Through there, went into working for Giorgio Armani and into Donna Karan in terms of loss prevention and retail security. From there, I went into British Home Stores as a loss prevention manager, managing a number of stores, including the flagship at Oxford Street. Subsequently, after that, I then moved into Man Guarding and then subsequently set my own business up, and the rest is history, as they say. Been through a lot, seen a lot, worked with some fantastic people, worked with some lots of great people, worked with some absolutely brilliant clients, and worked with some lots of good clients. So we've all got our story to share, and this is all part of the forum, what we're going to try and create. So moving on, a bit of housekeeping. There's no fire drill. Unless your house is on fire, you know where the next emergency exit is. Just to make a really important point here, the SIA is a regulator. Okay, so it regulates our industry. That is it. They're like the DVLA. Once we pass our test, we've got a driver's license. We can then go and drive a car. If we want to then go and drive a lorry, we upgrade our license, so on and so forth. So just to make it really, really clear, the SIA is purely the regulator for our industry. Bit of housekeeping, I'm not here, will not discuss pay rates or bills. Okay, it's not an SIA function. It's not a function. We could talk about that to the cows come home, really, in terms of pay rates and charge rates throughout the industry. And it is the first topic of conversation when I meet somebody or talk to somebody who owns a security company about how bad the industry are in terms of rates. Hence why I've decided to put myself forward with this to try and change people's mindsets, try and get people working together. At the end of the day, as we're business owners, we are the ones choosing the contracts. We are the ones that are going in on the rates, and we are the ones that are paying our staff. So just to make that really clear, okay, none of the topics or conversations are going to be about pay rates and charge rates going forward. And really, I want to encourage a network for all of us. You know, all of you working together, you may want to use each other's services. You may have some great consultancy work that you may want to pass on, use each other's staff on events, projects. Great. I'm all for that. And you can network to the cows come home, including within these forums. So introduction, regional forums. Lawrence is on here. So Lawrence is my boss. Hi, Lawrence.
Hiya, Paul.
Hiya.
Giving up your time.
You're looking well. Yes, I have finally given you access to dial out. So, I report into Lawrence. I was appointed in March along with two other regional leads for the rest of the country. I believe Lawrence is putting together Scotland and one other location currently at the moment in terms of the whole of the UK. So we'll be responsible for our own regions, and then we'll feed into Lawrence, and then we'll feed into either quarterly or a yearly SIA expo, where we'll take all of our data back from the regions on good points, bad points, what you guys are throwing at me. There may be a trend in a certain area that the SIA may need to know about very quickly, and look at best practice and change certain procedures and planning. So we want to explore and raise the standards within our industry. That's why I'm here. Okay, no other reason whatsoever. I'm doing this voluntarily. I'm not being paid by the SIA. I've donated my time. I've given a year of myself to make things right as far as I'm concerned within the south of England. I can't change this on my own. It's a corroboration of all of us working together. You know, there's lots of issues throughout the industry that we currently have. It's no good us keep talking about it. We've all got to get together and actually work together and work on a mass capacity instead of individuals and little groups popping up here and there and making no impact. So as I say, nationally, again, Lawrence, they may change that. It could be quarterly. We're obviously really behind in terms of the timeline because of COVID. I sort of jumped the gun with Lawrence's permission because I thought now would be a good time for some business owners. Now we're you know, we may be busy, we may not be busy, to start getting some traction for our region and start putting things together. So the aims is to develop an industry regulatory collaboration, identify new emerging and existing industry themes, provide a forum which businesses can collaborate more effectively. So really what you've got, guys, is a voice. You've got a shoulder to cry on. I'm not going to teach you how to run your business. I can only give you advice. I can only give you support. But if all of us are sort of talking about the same topic, then it's an industry-wide concern that we have, or an industry good. You know, we've got to look at the good parts of our industry as well as the bad. And I think it's too much in the public at the moment. Bad, bad, bad. You know, we've got some fantastic people out there that work for us. You know, I cover nationally throughout the UK. Many of you on here have your own businesses as well, and you've got some great staff and you've got some bad staff, but that's the industry. So really, we have to do our best to work together. Okay. Working together to raise the standards and promote consistent practices within the private security industry. And that's the aim, really, of the forum, is what we're going to put together. So today's webinar is to explore the impacts of the current crisis, which is COVID. Now, I thought I'd start with that topic, first of all. We'll come on to some questions. It's going to be interactive, so I'm going to throw some questions out. Rick Baker, my training director, and Steve McNulty, my business development manager, are helping me with this. So we're going to throw some questions out. I want to make it interactive. Open your mic up, have a chat. We'll go from there, okay? Explore opportunities to corroborate, inform potentials, forum goals, and build a network for the southern region. So the workshop, okay? So as I mentioned, today's very interactive. If you're gonna sit there and say nothing, you're not gonna have your chance to change anything that we do, okay? So there's some chat rooms, we've got some polls coming up here, and I'll throw the mic open to anybody. Rick and Steve will pick somebody. You may have a question, you've got a chat button on there. Throw the question into the chat button and I'll do my best to answer. If not, I'll throw it out to everybody and we'll get some collective back. Today is being recorded, video and audio, part of an audit trail. That data will then be taken by the SIA to see if there's any trends or any urgent matters collectively that they may need to look at. There's a couple on here that we've already highlighted and including within the poll as well. So it'll be an interesting piece of feedback that we get. So strategic planning, what do we want to achieve? So we want a better security industry, okay? We've got to put strategies and measures together. We need to put an implementation plan together. Look at the activities and tasks, and then we monitor and evaluate and review. So we could think of a topic or a subject that we all may want to go away and look at our own businesses, how we operate, gather that data, gather that information. We're all separate business owners. I appreciate that. Everyone's got a profit and a bottom line to manage and maintain, which is absolutely brilliant. At the end of the day, what we're putting together here is a collective. So no matter if you turn over 100 million or £100,000 a year, it doesn't matter to me. We are all important, okay? I'm no different from anybody within this forum, okay? So the topic today is managing the impacts of the current COVID crisis. I thought I'd pick that topic. And in question one, I'm going to throw it out. What business impacts have you seen during this crisis? So if anybody wants to open the floor up, please be my guest.
Okay. So you're all very shy. Go on, Scott, shout, sorry.
I suppose the thing we've seen is certain sectors have had more of an impact for security, and then others have sort of like tailed off and needed minimum need. And it's being prepared with the officers that you've got to transition different types of jobs. Most of them for us have been pretty flexible and pretty accommodating work that they wanted to do. And I think that's been quite key, that's been like us going, is the fact that we've still got a workforce that do want to go out to work and represent themselves and the company well. I suppose the the one of the things that we've noticed, and again, no, we're not talking about money, was, and I don't know how to best describe it, it'd be like a pyramid of the subcontractors. Mm-hmm. So there's work that's going around, like going through the original company, then a subcontractor. You know, 5 months later, it's coming down to the actual contractor. And I don't think that that's particularly fair for the work on the ground. For them, I don't know if anyone else has got any thoughts on that.
So there's some good points you've made there, Sharon. For me, I think a lot of businesses, not security, but I think customers, they went into this knee-jerk reaction of, oh, we need extra security within retail, food sectors, logistics, so on and so forth. So there was this massive sort of curve. If we look at the coronavirus government curve, there was an industry curve that went up through the roof. So everyone was doubling up on security, 168s, 336s, the whole lot. And I think a lot of people, including the SIA, felt that there was going to be a shortage of staff. But it was obviously not, hence why furlough, you see on Facebook, you've seen on LinkedIn, the amount of companies saying they've got resources, they've got staff, they've done a 360 on a pivot on a lot of their business operations in terms of putting staff out in sort of cleaning roles for extra work and so on and so forth. So I think there's been a huge jump, and then we've gone into this sort of lull. One of the questions that you've raised in terms of subcontracting, we have a poll that we'll release shortly in a moment. That is on the topic and the top of my agenda and what's been going on and what I've been seeing throughout the industry. And again, on social media, I think we've gone back to the 2020 Olympics, where all of a sudden these pop-up companies popped up overnight, stating that they've got staff and then subbing in. So, you know, if we take a certain food client, we won't mention any names, this food client needed sort of 1,000 staff, main contractor was in, main contractor then went to Company X then went, wow, look at us, went to 50 other companies throughout the UK, non-ACS companies, filtered it out, offered such poor rates, okay, and, you know, there will be a fallout. Will be a fallout of this, and but I'm not going to air my own personal views, but yes, it is a problem. I do believe that once the Prime Minister on Monday possibly starts relaxing slightly over the next 3 weeks, various different measures, we all may see again a spike where customers, food retailers may want to start increasing again security, because If Joe Public, like ourselves, have got freedom of movement to go to shops and to go out shopping, there may be a bulk buy regime again. The UK is going to be short of toilet roll. So we'll have a toilet roll epidemic. So it's going to buy thousands and thousands of toilet rolls. Okay. Social distancing will still be in place. People will start going back to work. I think the stay at home logo may slightly drop down more. So security may be needed, but I agree with your point. Does anybody else differ for what Sharon's mentioned?
For instance, in my opinion, I completely agree. There's too much subcontracting, and the problem is that the main contractor is not transparent with their own clients, and then there's a misunderstanding or misperception where the guards on the ground are getting such a poor rate when the main contractor is making such a big profit. And I believe if you are going to subcontract, you should be transparent with the client, saying, look, we haven't got the staff because it's impossible from in the next 12 to 24 hours to get 1,000 staff just as quick as you need them. So this is what we're going to do. So that way, you know, the client knows what they're going into, and it's their decision to say, okay, we agree with this, or no, let's give you certain sections and then give other businesses what the first contractor can't supply.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and you've got to look at the main contractor. Obviously, they have a contract with that X client. Let's just say, call it client X. They have a standard minimum requirement. Then obviously, COVID's kicked in. The client's gone, right, okay, social distancing measures have got to be going in. We've gone to more of a crowd safety role in terms of distancing customers outside. They've gone for a crowd safety role inside the aisles. They're obviously policing the amount of items that you are allowed to buy, free item rule, toilet rolls, et cetera, et cetera. So they've automatically gone, right, we need to increase our security cover. So, you know, company X has gone, right, let's sub it out. So they've then gone out to another individual company. I don't know the mechanics and the setup of that. They clearly don't have the capabilities. They've then gone to 50 additional companies. And both companies are ACS, and then they've gone to a pyramid, and you know, you've got door supervisors that would 1 minute not bother or want to go into work being paid £15 an hour, now getting national minimum wage. So I think there's a lot of fight and flight where people were worried, and I get that. Listen, you know, I've got 500 employees, PAYE. I haven't furloughed a single employee. We have work. We have a very, very strong crowd safety arm, and we have a very, very strong retail and commercial man guarding arm. So the contracts that we had that sort of really pivoted, where we could use stewards in car parking roles and car parking marshals, etc., etc. Some people chose to self-isolate. I get it. Some people decided that they wanted to go SSP. There was government mechanisms. Yeah, so I fully understand that. But there will be a fallout. I guarantee you there will be a fallout, because you've got to look at what you probably all see how much the rates were publicised. How can you make a profit, pay tax, national insurance, holiday pay, pension, getting paid 10, 20 an hour?
Well, you can't, can you? Just got to do the basic. That's the thing. And I suppose my thing is that I would like to see that whether that be a regulation that the SAA could look at, that there's a limit to how the subcontracting works generally across the board, because I think it's taken advantage of, and I think it's the little man at the end that's getting the, you know, end of the deal, and I think that's taken advantage doing that. It's 2020 now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's I can take them feedback. I can take that takeaway point, and I can definitely sort of feed that back. And that was on the agenda, and I have discussed that at length as well. So I can feed back to you. I've got some more data and some more information on that as well. Trust me, this won't be the case of, all right, we've had a webinar, we've had a forum, great, there's nothing after this. I'll be very, very operational in terms of taking these points, going back, because this is not just about us, this is the whole of the UK.
Exactly.
The issues that we see, you know, it's up and down the country. So next question is, what measures have you used to mitigate some of these impacts? So in terms of business, have many of you furloughed staff? Have you taken additional staff on? Have you increased in terms of your staffing levels and capabilities? Has some of you continued as business as normal? What's the sort of general norm?
Again, I suppose for us, we've not furloughed any of our officers because they've been happy to go out working. Again, like you, we've had people that have gone on self-isolation, which is absolutely fine. What we do, we had to furlough some of the people within our business support team. So we furloughed three people just so that we could keep a balance on everything. And it worked quite well, because the people that were chosen, they're quite pleased to actually be off, because they work part-time. But they have other commitments, so it meant they had the time to deal with their other commitments. So for us as a business, it worked quite well, and we were quite a bit of the furlough scenario, because I don't know what we would have done otherwise, in all honesty. We only furloughed three people.
That's brilliant. Well done. That's really good. Anybody else? Alexander, anybody? You can't sit there and just smile, Alex. You gotta say something.
No, we lent some of our staff out because we didn't have the resources.
Yeah.
So we've lent some of our staff to another company. And they're getting paid very well by the other company. We're not taking any profit from them.
So you've just done that, Alex, to make sure that they've got work, and then after this, hopefully we're out, you being as loyal as what you've shown, they'll come back and start working for you back on your projects again.
Yes, well, fingers crossed. I know not a lot of them are happy with the way this other company works, but they are getting paid well.
Okay.
So it gives me time to catch up on what I need to catch up on. But I've got my guys working.
Good. Brilliant.
No, good. That's good. Good plan.
So, Have any of you diversified your business? So, from your core business, have any of you done anything completely different that you've never done outside of security? Have you, you know, deliveries or car drivers and using staff for X, Y, and Z? It's not a trick question. We're just intrigued.
Paul.
I think you have, haven't you, Scott?
Sorry?
You have, haven't you, Scott? You've been diversifying during the lockdown.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to keep quiet because it's cutting out a lot. But I've only furloughed the office staff. A lot of my staff have jumped across to other roles. I mean, I've got ops staff doing NHS deliveries. I've been doing dent deliveries. I've swapped bailiff vans across to security vans so that we can do different patrols.
Do you think by obviously you've got a good successful bailiff business as well as your security arm, do you think that's helped you?
It's helped everyone I could help, but I've got to be honest. I mean, a lot of the bailiffs were cross-trained, so a lot of them have jumped over. Those that couldn't jump over because of the SIA badges,
yep.
Not a dig. We're doing a lot of warfare deliveries. We're quite instrumental in the three hospitals here in Essex in doing the uniform deliveries. Obviously, I was delivering milk, and we've been doing a lot of welfare work, which, we'll pick up brownie points on the I keep on saying to people, we hopefully will pick up brownie points in the new world.
Yeah.
I listened there earlier on, sorry to interrupt and go back a bit, this subbing, and we've obviously been offered subbing stuff at silly money that I can't cover nothing on, so we won't take it. But the only thing just to throw in there, and I did speak to somebody that I deal with at the SIA because we're waiting for our ACS to go through, is the sheer amount of companies that are making a mockery of the ACS, in my opinion, whether it be ACS or otherwise. They're making a mockery of the SIA. There's companies cropping up everywhere. The directors aren't even registered with the SIA themselves.
Yeah, it's a good point, Scott. I think it's like... if we cast our mind back to sort of 2012 with the Olympics.
Yep.
And it's, listen, within this global pandemic, there's going to be some multi-millionaires made. It's as simple as that. And there's going to be some very, very broke people coming out the outside of this. And there's people that have just got into this industry. And I get it. They've got to feed their families. But there will be a conclusion. And... I think there'll be a lot of casualties in terms of security providers going forward. I think people have jumped on the bandwagon too quickly in terms of the subcontracting, and then when it comes down to paying the VAT and the PAYE and everything else, there's going to be some serious casualties into it. I don't think we're out of the woods yet.
Paul, sorry, just go one back there though. We all do our own internal due diligence, yeah? So someone rings us up and offers us, can you do this? Yes, I want the best for what I've got in terms of staff base. But when I'm doing due diligence and I can't even get past and find that anybody in your office has got an SIA badge, how on earth can you create a company, create a web page, put the SIA logo on it, and nobody on your board of directors has got an SIA badge?
Yeah.
Well, that's all goes back to the fact that there's no business license in place, which has been talked about for 10 or 15 years now.
But do you think the business license would change it?
It would alleviate a little bit, wouldn't it? Because the companies that Scott's talking about now wouldn't be able to operate without that license.
Mm.
Yeah, we agree with that. There needs to, we've always said to the SIA, there should be maybe two tiers, like ACF one tier, and if we don't want to go through all of that, because obviously there is a lot of work that goes with that, one tier down, maybe like the business license. So you have to be licensed to operate a security business. You're audited annually,
yeah.
By the SIA, just so that you can apply to everything that they've done. Because if you don't, you can't really find security.
Sure. Good point. Very good point. Next question, and again, you know, it's open to everybody, and you may have some great stories to share. Is how has the industry worked together? Have you seen some great success stories in terms of companies coming together? I know you mentioned about the horrible subcontracting word, but has any partnerships formed where it's, look, you know what, that's saved me for the next 2 or 3 weeks by, you know, working with that person. I never thought I'd work with that person or their company. Is anything good come out of this so far?
I would say, yeah. I mean, we built up a couple of good relationships. We potentially didn't really know anything about it. It's worked really, really well. We've managed to pick up work because they were unable to cover the area that we could. Yeah. So a bit of a win-win. They had the work, we had the people, and everyone's getting paid, you know, a fair rate.
Yeah.
All being done properly. So. Yeah, there is. I think there have been pluses as well. I suppose like everyone, we all think about the negative, but we don't always remember the positive. But yeah, definitely for us, it's definitely been good in that respect.
Mm-hmm. What I've seen, so I've been self-isolating now from day one, working from home, probably doing more hours working from my home office than I would do in my normal office, and that's only sort of 10 miles down the road. But for me, LinkedIn is a great networking forum. You know, we've been doing a hell of a lot in terms of putting information out, looking at different white papers, ideas, and people coming together in terms of LinkedIn and asking for some advice, and how you impacted and what are you planning to do. And, you know, most of us as business owners have our business case plans and, you know, projections and cash flows for quarterlies and monthlies, mine's weekly. You know, I've had to change, readapt everything I do now to week by week by week.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a couple of people I've helped out, and that's not giving them work. That's in terms of, look, you know, take this, put that into place, try this out. And that may be from additional training modules, different PowerPoints. So I've had a lot of people come to me to ask for help and advice. I've had a lot of people come to me offering me their staff at £10 an hour, and they've simply been linked off of my LinkedIn contacts. And the minute I put this post up about a week ago, I was absolutely inundated throughout the country on my private LinkedIn network. Paul, can we supply staff to you at £10? Paul, can we supply? And I'm like, no, you know, I'm not interested to do that. I wouldn't do that full stop. But I've had some really nice people that I've never met that have followed one of our posts. Look, I'm really stuck here. I've only got a small staffing pool and this, that, and the other. And I've put them in touch with companies that I know and reputable ACSs and said, look, you know, go to them. I know they're looking for X, Y, and Z. The rates are really good. It may be 2 weeks. It may be, you know, a week's worth of work. So I think there's some nice stuff come out of it. I think there's some brilliant pictures that the SIA have put up in terms of key workers. Yeah. Our staff are now being recognised as key worker. I think that's a huge milestone, what the SIA got over the line there. And I lobbied that, and I'm really, really glad that Ian Todd got that push through. If that gets relaxed after COVID, that's another topic of conversation. But I think a lot of staff, and we've seen it within our company, we've had some really, really good diamonds come shining through, especially on our NHS hospital contracts. You know, there's people dying in there, but they're still turning up for work and people coming out of the mortuaries. So I think a lot of people have come together. I think there is a huge rogue element established again within it as well. They will get found out. They will get found out very, very quickly. It won't take long.
Yeah, and I think the sharing of information, like on the positive, like information shared, as you say, just even if it's guidance or company, I think people appreciate that.
Yeah.
Really do, because sometimes people think you always want something, know. Just share what I know. If it helps you, then good. I hope it helps you.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Next question: what future impacts might there be on the security security business? What future impacts are we going to be looking at? Do you think we're going to see a shortage in staff? Do you think that people are going to leave the industry after this due to the amount of unemployment? And look at all the major airlines and organisations, the amount of staff they're laying off. Will we see a shortage in the industry? Will we all of a sudden see a massive surge of employment within the industry?
I think there'd be a massive surge for people wanting to get into security, but they won't necessarily be the people we all want, in all honesty. I think a lot of people will think it's an easy job, and if you always pick work, but whether you know the people we all want, I would probably say no. Good people that we've all got don't decide to leave, because I know it's been pretty challenging for a lot of them. Certainly the guys have been over working within the NHS and doing that sort of work. I mean, I think that people have been really tested, but then, you know, they've turned up. So we need people like that, because that's get the good people, and hopefully the image of the security industry will change because of people like that. That body that's at a door, that they're able to do so much more, and there is more to them than just that.
I think the appointment of a key worker in terms of critical national infrastructure project really escalated the security industry up in people's eyes.
And yeah,
through all the blue light services, you know, I've got friends who are in the police, I've got friends in medical and all the rest of it, and they're like, oh, I didn't realise, you know, you've got access now to get on the train to come here and, you know, and bits and pieces. We've done the, this week of our staff letters, so when yeah. the announcement came in, HR sent out letters to the staff and said, look, travel this is a travel warrant as well as your badge. And a couple of them got stopped, and the police were like, well, why do you need that for? Because you already got a badge, you are a key worker. So I think it was a very much mixed message. You know, but in terms of key worker status, I really hope that gets extended and, you know, that stays in place for the general public to recognize. Because, you know, you look at cleaning staff, you look at security staff, if they weren't operational now, who's going to be cleaning the hospitals? Who's securing the hospitals? You know, we've got the great nurses and the doctors and the paramedics, but it's a whole family, it's a whole team. And I think that's got to continue going forward.
As an add-on to that, Paul, do you think, or people on the forum, have your clients started thinking of you differently?
Good question.
Silence. I can throw in on that, Steve. We've had a lot of our clients that are obviously at the moment closed that have involving us, especially myself personally, have been involving us a lot more in potentially looking at the reopening program and getting what I would ask a lot more questions that we would generally not be asked, other than you can use your supply as a body. They're going for a lot more. So I, for one, have noticed a lot more involvement from the clients that are at the moment closed. We've not really got involved in the shop work. We've got some shops, but it's, I think Paul McArthur just added that area. He's trying to offer value to the service that we're supplying, other than just a body in a uniform standing at a supermarket. But one thing I have personally noticed is a lot of my clients that we would have normally worked with are involving us a lot more in what I would class as the prelims to potentially reopening.
Yeah, we've noticed that as well. We've been asked out. You don't always get. Always allowed to give it, so yeah, definitely. We've because we've got the other side of our business, we've always done cleaning, but that's obviously, you can imagine, been quite busy throughout all of this. And the clients that use both our services had, you know, so that's good, because you feel you've actually got a real make an impact to everyone.
I can just say something. I feel like
I was wondering when you were going to turn your microphone on.
I think one of the things that has come out of this is that everyone's celebrating the fact people like the NHS service are putting their life on the line for everybody. And I think one thing, as all our security key workers are out there, they do that, they did that before, they're doing it now and they're doing it after. And I think it's something that has never been really, really pushed, that frontline security put their life on the line every single day and have been doing for years and years and years. And how do we, I think every time a serious incident happens, whether it's, you know, this pandemic or a terrorist attack, everyone thinks, wow, security are so good. Yep. And then that thought process goes because there's no, everyone isn't on high alert anymore. And I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about a stab-proof vest. And I was saying, I had a license for 3 years, I worked on the doors. I never wore a vest. No one ever suggested I wear one. I never really thought about it. And we were talking about the corporate environment and how they wouldn't, the corporate, you know, corporate clients, big offices, wouldn't want you to have a big bulky vest, but there are the thin ones, but they're expensive. And so he said, they're not going to, you know, the firms aren't going to pay for that. Why wouldn't the end client pay for it? Mm. Now we've established that we've got security, their lives are on the line for the protection of your building, your employees, your customers. Why can't you spend an extra fiver per staff to, if you know, to protect them better?
Yeah.
And so I would hope that the future impact here is that as an industry, we push to our clients individually that actually we've been doing this for years and are always putting our lives on the line. And what more can you do to help us protect our staff going forward?
Do you still think security is a dirty word?
I think it's got, I still think it has quite harsh connotations. I think security, people either think of it as a thing or a guard on a gate. And I think we have to help work, change the whole perception that security is people. It's a person. Like what you were talking about, you know, your staff at the supermarket, the amount of posts I've seen where people have written to the supermarket saying, the people holding us in the line were so helpful, so polite, so kind, and they haven't even said your security.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
just saw it as part of the client. And so again, security is now a much more holistic concept, but I don't think clients yet and society, people, you know, the people we protect, understand that.
That's good.
The point on that though is, don't you think that that's partly the industry's fault? Because going to what we were talking about earlier, we've swam to the bottom as an industry by constantly undercutting each other. It's always been about price, yeah, and the customers are always driven by price.
Mm. Yeah.
Someone's interfering there. So I think we're our own worst enemies as well within the industry.
But that's why the business license, what you were talking about before, personally, I agree that something like that has to come in, because anybody could set up a security firm right now. There's no real investment needed. Like, you can't just set up a law firm in 24 hours. You know, there's a range of things you have to go through. So if there was a little bit more process and investment needed to set up a security firm, then all the people at the bottom, which all they do is they have no overheads, no real costs, and they're undercutting everything, they're part of the issue as well, I think.
And they won't be here in 3 months' time when the bills are due.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, you know, I just wrote a white paper and it's going to be coming out soon. It's basically whose bottom line are we protecting? So, you know, we're all business owners. We've got to run our own profits and, you know, look forward at the same time as well. It's a buyer's market. You know, we're all no different in here. You know, I'll use myself as an example. So last trading year, we lost nearly £5 million worth of business on tenders. Not bad service, but based on, I wasn't prepared to change my business model in terms of not profit, but staff rates.
Yeah.
And that was London Living Wage rates. You know, certain clients want the Rolls Royce service, okay, but they want to pay, and I've got no objection to mini metros, but pay the mini metro money,
yeah,
and they want all this package. They want the management support, they want the 24-hour control room, they want the training, the CPD, they want monthly meetings, quarterly meetings, reports, this, that, and everything else. Great. It's a professional service. They're looking after assets, you know. And it is a race to the bottom, unfortunately, and it's all about pricing. We're all no different. Everyone here that has a business, we all offer the same product. Okay, we offer either human beings or a technical approach to security. but we're all bidding against each other. You know, and you've got ACS companies losing tenders to non-ACS companies because of the pricing structure on the weighting from a tender.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's soul-destroying from an ACS company where they've got their insurance, their ISO, and this and that, and offices, and staff, and backstage, and then you've got, and don't get me wrong, I set up many, many moons ago with a mobile phone in a one-bedroom flat in Enfield.
Yeah.
Okay, and it grew very quickly. Then I had to go on and move on then to offices and staff and everything else. You know, there is an attraction, and I can see it, and I see the reasons why. There is an attraction for a business owner to run a business with limited overheads. I see that attraction because the market is out there for clients to go, well, do you know what? You are cheap. We may be a local authority. We may be an NHS. The due diligence hasn't been checked, but because you've got into that catchment of it's only going to cost us that against five other tenders and you're the cheapest, the buyer is always looking for that cheaper price. But then the problem is there are so many of us within the industry as business owners, it's a buyer's market. And if us in the South came together and just we use it as a scenario, and we turned and said, you know what, as a collective and an MOU between us all, we would not touch a single client in the south of England, charge rates less than £15 an hour, but paying proper rates to our staff.
Yeah.
Some people go, Paul, you're off your head, you're mad. They'll go off on their way. But then if you get a majority that becomes a mass, the clients are going to go, hold up a minute. There's no one's going to want to cover us because everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet in terms of charge rate, pay rate.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's not a monopoly, and the SIA will never regulate that. You can never ask the SIA to regulate that whatsoever. But I think as a collective between us all, if we're all going for that same piece of work, we all want it, but you know, if we all go, do you know what? My staff member is a career, okay? And for what you want me to do, we want that person to earn London living wage, okay? We want that person to get paid their holiday, their pension, their tax, their NI, private healthcare or medical care or some sort of perk box or some sort of recognition scheme. Then that becomes a career because you can afford to pay that person. And 3% increase per year, 2% increase each year on a salary. But while everyone's still swimming down the river, we're all like salmon. We're all going that way, but we're all swimming against each other. We're all bidding against each other. You know, I'll put my business hat on here. We're all bidding against each other in what we do. You know,
No, I was just going to say, it's really weird because we don't have much transparency. So if you look at the legal sector, you've got what they call the magic circle, the silver circle. Then you've got like top 50, top 100. Everyone knows that, and even the high street firms, they can still do a job, but they don't have perhaps the same resources, the same capabilities. Mm-hmm. And each firm at the magic circle or silver circle or top 50 will have what their strengths are. We almost need that because then you can start to dictate your rates, and if they're going to go cheaper, they have to expect they're not going to get the same service, and then that won't damage the industry reputation, because part of the problem is they go with the cheapest, then it's rubbish, then it's the whole security industry reputation gets damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost transparency, not even at like the worker level, but at the firm level. Like, how do we almost create, like, not tiers as mm-hmm. such, but so that more people know what firms are good. Even though we're all in competition, we should still work together to try and almost profile ourselves as firms.
And that's what the ACS is.
But the ACS doesn't work.
There's
a law firm, the legal industry, hasn't been done by a regulation. That has been done by the industry itself, because ACS doesn't work because it isn't promoted enough. Clients don't think that, half the clients even know that they, even if they know they should go with an ACS, do they really know why, or do they care, or are there any penalties if they don't? No.
I think, I don't know if any of you have operated and worked in Dublin. I've had offices and worked in Dublin. So you've got the Private Security Act out in Dublin. It's very much like, it's regulated like the SIA. But out there, you have JLC rates and they are dictated. So if your staff member works on a Saturday, or sorry, on a Sunday, it's double time. Everyone gets it. If they're working on Saturday, it's time off. And the regulator enforced that with the revenue. So it's very, you know, although you have a regulator that doesn't get involved in terms of pay and everything else in the UK, in Dublin, they've got a different model out there where, you know, everyone has to pay that rate of pay to that individual on the Sunday, double time, time and a half on Saturday, and even overnight, I think it's 8 hours, they have to pay time and a half, and that is all regulated, and they get audited. So when I had a business out in Dublin, we was audited, including payroll, to ensure that any of our staff working on a Sunday were getting paid the JSA rates at these rates, and on a Saturday as well. You know, that, who knows? That could be a topic that, you know, we could put forward. The SIA, again, are only a regulator, but they have a bigger set of shoulders that could then lobby and say, right, if we could put something forward or put something through. But, you know, I agree with you. There's two contracts that I operate on, and there's five of us that the contract's been split up on. And part of my original tender I put forward to the client is, look, you're going to have five of us here bidding for lots of this stadium. Everyone should be paid the same. Everyone should be charged the same. And they're like, how's it going to work? Well, it's quite simple. If I have Section A and I sack a member of staff, that company in Section B is going to take that person on. Why? They shouldn't be allowed. I've sacked them for a misconduct issue within a stadium or an event. That contractor should not be allowed to take that person on back in that venue. Also, it stopped then contractor B paying more money where my staff would then leave doing the same role and jump on. So it did come into force and it did work. And luckily, we were one of the fortunate companies that bidded and won for the contract. But that model there, you know, I was, you know, everyone looked at me and went, you're mad. We ain't going to agree to that. We shouldn't be doing that. Well, hold up. It's an equal playing field here. You know, I have my own skill set. My managers have their own skill set. Our staff, all the staff, 1,100 staff, we're all, you know, going for the same common goal and objective here. Do the job. Get the customers in safe. Get the customers out safe. Pay them the same. We charge the same. That's it. And it works. And it's absolutely brilliant. And it's a great partnership between the five of us, five individual companies, and we all work together. And it's a good model to have. And I would implore that. And we do put that in part of our tenders going forward with clients as a recommendation. Look, you know, it's too big for us. You shouldn't have one provider supplying 1,100 staff. We're all KPI'd the same, pay the same, charge the same. And then you measure against your staff and your management support on that contract. And I think there should be a lot more of that. But again, the SIA can't regulate that. We can never ask them. But us as business owners, it's probably things that we should put in front of clients if we're working on a multi-contract with other providers. That this is a concept. Other providers may not want to go with it. But if I was a buyer and you came to me with that solution, I'll go, do you know what? That's innovation. You're not scared to lose that piece of work, because I'll be scared in having to worry about if, you know, X amount of my staff are booking in with us and then going and signing in with another company because they're getting 20 pence an hour more or 50 pence an hour more. You know, so everyone operates on the same playing field. And I think that's it was a good model that we used and put forward. Does anybody else operate within that?
We have done before in a slightly different sector, because we've got another side of the business. Mm-hmm. and the client was very agreeable that we did that. And I think the best way to work on that, because then you are taking away the competition, but because it's level, you've all got the business because you're paying, but you're delivering the same service. It's up to you to ensure that you continue to deliver that. Because I think that little bit of competition's been removed, but you can't relax.
Yeah, good idea. Anybody else?
Yeah, for instance, we specialise in the provision of canine security. So what I see all the time, and this is not on a regular basis, is that everyone provides dogs, but nobody actually has their own canine section, and then sub it, and then it comes down to us. So what happens that the main contractor gets the credit, but we don't. Yeah. So then how does it work? Like, I've always said, okay, these are our rates, but we have to provide our own signs, and we take the credit for our canine provision. I'm not going to take over your man guarding, but we are two different companies working in partnership, not me working for you and then you are working for a client.
Scott, you disagree?
Everyone's got a personal view, and now I have a canine division and I have used K in the past. I certainly wouldn't, with respect to everybody that runs a canine division, that's my site, and if I've been asked for canines and I can't supply them, I will look for an approved subby, but I wouldn't expect them to be able to put their signs up on my site. That's my view, and it's just my personal view. We get asked on a regular basis through the bailiffing company, because we specialise in one particular part, we get asked regularly for canines. It's a source of revenue for me. But when I send out the booking sheet, it states on it that you are under us. It'd be my signs. It doesn't actually state my signs, but I certainly wouldn't let a canine company come in. We had a big situation just last week where it's probably the biggest traveller eviction I've done. We obviously looked at upselling afterwards. I could supply one canine as me, and without sort of digressing, I couldn't supply the second because of the area and location, so I put it out to three companies. But the remit on it says if it's, you're there in an unliveried vehicle, unliveried, ununiformed. If that's wrong, I'm quite open to talk to people, but...
Yeah, look, I'm not saying this because there are contracts and contracts, because sometimes... You will say, okay, we're providing the canines for yourselves, but this is where I'm very adamant as being transparent to the client, saying, look, we can provide you with canine security, and we work in partnership with this company, and we can put it ahead and work together, but not say, okay, yes, it's our canine section, when it's actually not. You know, I'm not talking about you in particular, Scott, but a lot of companies do this. And, you know, I've been trading as a limited company for 2 years, and I see it all the time. And we can't take any credit for, you know, what the client is satisfied with our guys, instead of actually being from the main contractor.
Okay. Got you, both of you, you got your points there. I'm going to keep out of that one. So we just released a poll very, very quickly. There's three questions on the poll. If you don't mind, just to take a quick second and have a look at the questions.
Oh, can I ask a question on that? Sorry.
Go on, Scott.
I haven't spoken. I said I've got a question on that. And I haven't spoken to you for years, so for that I apologise. But we're not primarily, well, we're not even primarily a security company, as you know, I've always run security. But we were in the throes, and I have to say the SIA have been great. We were in the throes of becoming an ACS. It's conversations I had with Steve over the last months. And what I'm finding, I'm not sure about, I don't know how many people are on here, I'm trying to still work this computer.
125.
Right. Well, we're not ACS, and I'm getting a little bit, and this is not directed towards anybody, I'm hearing, and I had a conversation the other night of another company saying, oh yes, but we've done this and we've done that and we're doing this, and just because we're not ACS, mm-hmm. It's starting to get to the stage where it's giving me the ump, because we're not ACS, but we've got ISO, we've got Safe Contractor, we've got this, we've got that, we've got this, we've got that, and we was going through the ACS system, and it's on hold, and I've got a lovely letter saying it's on hold and we pick it up and whatever else, but I'm starting to lose, I'm trying to get it into words, the ACS, the aspects of it's going to be.
You're losing the dream, you're losing the vision on it, because you don't see and it's on the poll here, and I get where you're coming from. So you've got an ISO, you've got your standards, you've vetted your 7858, and you have an external audit in terms of your ISO. So in terms of your ACS, which is voluntarily, do you think there's a return on investment for you as a business owner being an ACS company? Have you seen having an ISO increase your tendering and sales capability by having these accreditations? Have you seen it? Have you seen by having your ISO has increased your ability to...
It's enabled us to get through to different stages of PQQs, but the fact is, and I had this conversation, and maybe this is not the place to say it, so I had this conversation the other night, and the guy was like, oh, we would only use accredited upper-end ACS companies. And I was like, well, you're insulting us, because I've enforced personally on ACS companies for non-payment of bills, for non-regulatory compliances, and you're ACS.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get into ACS, this ACS, and I'm to say, I was quite openly having a heated conversation the other week, and I was like, so you can't use me because I'm not ACS, but you tell me you can put it through that company, and I've got to approach that company to get that work, possibly the same as this lady Sharon was saying earlier, right? When I've enforced on that company as a High Court bailiff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make you any better, I'm afraid.
I think what that does, Scott, I think, like you said, procurement, and again, I've wrote another white paper on for guidance for procurement. I'm going to release that in the next week or so as well. So what I'm trying to do is give intelligence to procurement departments. You know, we see it in Steve, you know, God, the amount of tenders over the years that you've done for businesses, and Steve's just recently joined me as well. You know, Scott, you've done your fair share of tenders and everything else. You know, you can have a tender and it's like that, and in it will have a small part, are you ACS or do you have an ISO? Okay, and it's great, and you spend weeks upon weeks and weeks, and you bundle it up and spend all money on it and put your heart and soul, and you give it a little kiss and off it goes in the post, and you're thinking, yes, we're going to get that, we're going to get it, we're going to get it. And you lose it to a non-ACS company. What is the point of having that caveat in there with PPQs and ITTs? I think a lot of it is a tick box exercise for procurement where they don't understand our industry and they don't understand what it means to have an ACS. It is voluntarily. So we volunteer our own money and our own time, because we want to put our head above the parapet in terms of our accreditation, in terms of our standards and our processes and procedures. But I don't think buyers, Scott, fully understand what it means to be or have a company with an ACS accreditation. I think they've just seen an article or gone onto the SIA website. Oh, right, okay, yeah, fine. All right, put it in that tender. So we're whittled down 500 companies now. We're whittled down to 200 companies. And yeah, okay, they've got an ACS. And you're right. And I've been party and seen off that as well in terms of, you know, losing out work to companies with non-ACS. And I've actually objected and put appeals into local authority tenders where it stated you could not move on to the next section unless you was an ACS provider with an ISO 9001. And then another company won it. So
I've given up counting how many times during a presentation to a board I've had to explain how our industry works.
Yeah.
So they asked for ACS. They haven't got a clue what it means.
No.
You're right. They just heard it somewhere.
And I think personally, guys, we're at fault for it.
Yeah.
I think us in the industry and us.
I'll put some maths on it. I'll put some maths on it because I like maths. Yeah. There's 411,000 licensed officers in the UK. In fact, 47,319. I was on the SA website a moment ago while we've been chatting. So you've got that's a lot of people with licenses, isn't there? How many ACS companies are there? Does anyone know?
720.
Oh, you know, Paul. You sure? How many ACS companies are there? 712. Looking after 411. Sorry, Lawrence.
860.
They've gone up.
Yeah, you. Where did you get those stats from?
Off your website.
Off your website. You need to look into it. It says 712 ACS companies.
But don't forget, Steve, the SIA have been furloughed, so it's probably...
Yeah, of course, yeah, it's not been updated. It's not been updated. But what the point I'm trying to make is, you've got 712 companies, there's 47,000 officers. We haven't each got 30,000 officers working for us. So how many companies are there out there that aren't ACS? No one knows.
Yeah.
Exactly. The ACS was meant to be a differentiator to let clients know that we're fit for purpose.
What's a good guess? What would a good guess be on how many firms there are in the UK?
10,000.
More than that.
Lawrence, what do you think?
I've got no idea. I've asked quite a few people over the last 6 months.
We've chatted about that, haven't we, Huda?
Yeah, and I've had anything from like 100,000 to 5,000. So, I mean, I just don't think anybody knows.
I think we're definitely looking in the 100,000s.
You think?
Easy.
No.
Yep, definitely.
What do you think, Lawrence?
I think if you consider them solely on established businesses that supply sort of contracts as opposed to people supplying their mates to around under services, I'd say about 6,000 to 8,000.
I thought about 10. My math was on 10. Sharon, what do you think? How many do you think?
I reckon 25,000.
She knows. That was a too much of a ballpark figure. You got
everyone, honestly.
The point is, no one knows.
Yeah.
And that's the worrying thing. That is a worrying thing.
It is, because if you go back about law companies, you know how many law companies or what they specialise, you know how many finance companies, you know all of that. But we're supposed to be an industry that's regulated, but we're not really.
No.
Because if there's companies out there that can trade, and I'm not saying that because people have not got the ACS, they don't do it properly, because I know equally there's a lot of companies out there that do it properly.
Yeah, but it's correct.
No, that's the question against.
Yeah, the ACS doesn't tell your client that you can deliver security services. I remember my first ever ACS inspection. 2 hours in, the guy was driving me up the wall, and I said to him, I asked him what his background was. He'd never worked in security. So I asked him, what right did he have to audit me and my ability to deliver security? I'd got it all the way around. It wasn't a security audit, was it? It was an ISO audit. Completely different. So just because you've not got ACS, it doesn't mean you can't deliver good security services.
Yeah,
no. I mean, that's important to note. That's an answer to your question, that, Scott. What does ACS give you? It gives you a tick box to tell your client that you...
Steve, I will continue with the ACS when we get into the new world, purely because now I've opened up, and obviously I've got NHS contracts and whatever else, and now we've gone up to another level because of COVID-19. We've got bigger NHS contracts, right?
Yeah.
But The whole point of this debate I was having the other night, because I'm on a similar thing with a different group of companies, and I was saying, do you know what's frustrating me and annoying me is that people are saying, oh well, if you're not ACS, you're not this, and I'm like, listen, I put my High Court bailiff hat on, I've enforced against ACS companies, recently enforced against ACS companies, embarrassingly enforced against ACS companies, one that on a different conversation Mr. MacArthur will know, right, that I've enforced on them recently, and yet I lost a contract to them because they're ACS. Now, somebody's not doing due diligence checks there, and whether that's ACS, SIA, or whatever else, just because I'm not an ACS company at the moment doesn't mean that I can't do what you're doing as ACS.
Absolutely, 100%.
So, yeah. Anthony works for me as my portfolio manager, and he runs all the compliance. So, and in terms of, you know, you run all the ACS and the ISOs and the accreditations, our clients, will you some of our clients, out of sort of 100 clients, what do you think the percentage is of them recognising and understanding what ACS is between our client base?
Well, I can count on one hand how many ACS conversations I've had with clients that actually knew what it was that we do and what's involved in it. A lot of other people just don't really know, as you say, don't really know what is involved in all the auditing and bits like that. They just think it's something you can obtain quite easily, which obviously, as we know, it isn't. There's a lot of hoops you've got to jump through, a lot of bits that you've got to do to be compliant. I've just started looking over our new our ACS workbook again, just to start going through to making sure that any more points we can gain on it, ready for our audit later in the year. But yeah, one hand on how many in-depth conversations I've actually had with clients regarding ACS. I'm like, one of them NHS and one of them's the race courses. And people generally don't know what it is. And a lot of clients don't really care either. It's how much you're charging that they care about.
Just before Steve joined me, I before we went into to sort of lockdown, I took a phone call in the office from sales, picked the phone up. Wasn't one of our clients, potential client was going to come on. Had an issue with a site X, Y, and Z. So I was talking through it. Said some, you know, we're an ACS company. First thing they said, "Oh, that sounds expensive." Didn't know what ACS, and I went, "Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be the provider for you." And then just then said, "Thank you very much for the call and wish you all the best." That is the mindset. That is the mindset, because they think, "Oh, you're going to be more expensive because you've got an ACS accreditation." So I don't think people really know. I don't think buyers know. I don't think clients know. I think if you're dealing with a security-minded client that is up to date with regulatory and standards and process and procedures, they understand what ACS is. But if you're dealing with a buyer, or you're dealing with an ops individual or a GM or a general manager, that security is not at their forefront, ACS doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah.
No. So they will probably register what ISO is in terms of what they have to do. But I think, again, it comes down to education. A security-minded client will get it and understand what ISO is and what ACS is. A non-security-related client, but you still have to report into, doesn't understand. I've got clients both sides. Some are security clients, some are clients but not security minded, and you sit there and go through it and they're like, "You're here now, so it don't really matter." So it's a tough one. Going on to our poll, I know we're running over time, I'll wrap it up because most of you want to get out in the garden. Do you feel being
up north?
Hey?
It's raining up north.
Always grim up there, Steve.
We got some.
I've lost about half a stone being in this room. I can't even open the cat flap. I've got the ump. Do you feel like being an ACS company is value for money, and have you seen a return on your investment? So 33% thinking about becoming an ACS provider. Brilliant. You know, I applaud that. 6% have said no in terms of that question. So thank you very much for answering that. Next question, do you feel the SIA made the correct decision to relax in the use of non-ACS subcontracting companies being deployed by ACS through COVID? So we've got 17% totally against the decision. 33% say that the SIA made the correct decision in relaxing the ACS non-use of ACS companies. And 57%, I ain't got my glasses on, totally undermines the ACS standard and calls less working opportunities for ACS companies. And then finally, you're all lovely on this one, look at this. Do you feel by having a regional lead in place will enable a joint collective within the south of England to put forward recommendations and industry concerns? This will enable you to have a single voice of communication. And I scored 100%. Thank you very much for that.
Well done. Great.
So next steps, just to wrap up, okay, I'm going to take the information away, what we've discussed today. Some great points here, okay. Originally, we was meant to have, how many people in this, Rick?
45, I think.
45 people that actually physically signed up. I made a boo-boo, okay. I forgot today was bank holiday. So I've had some apologies and people that booked on and said, "Paul, you know,
gone now."
Whatever. So it was my fault. So we'll probably do another one in about a week's time. We'll pick up some of these topics I'll speak with Lawrence and we'll take some of the data and information and we'll open them up forward. So we want to establish our goals. I want to implement a strategy going forward, engage in the activities as well. And just a final slide I want to leave you guys with, okay? We have a lot of critics in our industries, okay? And we have a lot of talkers, but we don't have a lot of doers. My goal and mindset is to get everyone on that doer queue, okay? It's all well and good, social media and having a rant and having a moan and blaming the SIA for this and blaming the SIA for killing the industry and everything else. The SIA are a regulator, okay? It's as simple as that. They're the same as the DVLA. We can change the industry. We can change people's mindset, okay? And it's going to be hard, but we have to do something about it now for the next 5 to 10 years, okay? People can earn a very, very successful living out of being a security owner if you do it right. If you're going to go in for it just for a quick get in and get out, it won't last. So there's a lot of us have got invested time and money within our businesses, what we operate. And some of us sit on the fence or cannot communicate, get it forward to how you feel, what you would like to see changed. I've put myself forward for that. So all I can do is do my best for the south of England. If I don't do my best, then, you know, everything's open to change. It's as simple as that. I am a voice. I will not sit on the fence. If I think something is not right, I will get my view across. This ain't for Paul MacArthur at SGC Security Services. This is for Paul MacArthur and the wider region of the security industry. It's as simple as that. Whether I own my own business today or tomorrow, I would like to continue this role going forward to do my part in terms of making sure that we are recognised as an important function within the UK, within the security sector. So if you haven't got any more questions, thank you all very much for joining me. We will communicate out for our next webinar. And then please stay safe and hopefully I'll see you all again very, very soon. Thank you for joining.
Thanks, Paul.
Cheers, guys. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.